Melnick in the Afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.
That's where we're headed. Welcome back. Hour number two on Game Night, Habs and Sabres tonight right here on TSN 690. Billy Joe Shavers helping us head to Nashville, Tennessee, along with Rod Francis and Mitch Gallo. Mitch Melnick with you until 7 o'clock. Pleasure to welcome back to the show. As the Canadians are hosting the Sabres, the Nashville Predators are playing host to the Toronto Maple Leafs. That one's on TSN. TSN hockey analyst Ray Ferraro. How are you?
I'm doing great. We went out for ribs last night where Chris Cuthbert put on quite a display. I was actually quite impressed, and we were in a place that had four different sections that had four different live acts playing.
Oh, man.
And so if you didn't like the one you were at,
yeah.
I mean, it was all one restaurant, so you just went to another section.
And they weren't bleeding into one another.
No, it was incredible. It was so good.
Yeah.
And, of course, on the way to the place, we passed by 10 other establishments that had live music, too.
And,
it's an awesome place.
Yeah, that's I've spent one night there. It was a very long night.
Yes.
But all I did was spend one night there, and I'm itching to get back. And
and it's an easy place. Like everything's within like six blocks.
Right, like, including where you're working tonight, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Which by the way, I don't know. Not that you guys would ever have walked around with Chris Cuthbert, but. I've told you what it's like to walk with Gord Miller. You
yeah, know,
the
lean.
Lean. And you can't catch him. Chris and I, directionally, can't get from our rooms to the lobby. So it took us, I'm not kidding, 20 minutes to walk to the restaurant yesterday because we went the wrong way. It's right beside the rink. Today it took us five.
Well, it's because of all the show prep. You know, you guys are reading scouting reports and you got numbers to match names and it's all that going around in your head. And you know you can't. The brain is an amazing. It's an amazing part of the body, and we don't use nearly enough of it. That's basically it.
So we've gone to the rink, home from the rink, to the rink, and home from the rink. So far, we've gone four different ways. I'm not making this up. I've turned my map on my phone on. Three times.
Isn't that? It's when it gets to the point where you know nobody else knows this, but it's embarrassing to yourself.
Oh, it's just Chris and I. But I turned the map on this afternoon when we came back from the skate, and it literally said, turn left 300 feet. Like, we couldn't have been closer unless we were in the lobby of the hotel.
Yeah. That's like Gallo's trip to New York on his own for Game 7 last spring, right?
Yeah, my trip to New York and my trip to Boston and my trip in downtown Montreal. I'm clueless anywhere I go, really.
Yeah, but even with
with us, Mitch.
It'd be fun, I'm sure.
We see lots of things we're not intending to see, I'll tell you.
I think I play with more confidence, and I had a good tournament, and came back with Hamilton with good confidence, and I was trying to make more plays and create more scoring chances, and it's been paying off.
There is Jacob De La Rose. You saw him. He captained Team Sweden at the World Junior Hockey Championship here in Montreal and in Toronto. Called up yesterday. There was some thought that maybe Lars Eller was hurt, but it looks like he's going to play. He skated this morning. But regardless, Jacob De La Rose is going to make his NHL debut tonight. After going back down to Hamilton, he played a lot better than he did prior to the World Junior Hockey Championship. What were your overall impressions of what you saw?
Oh, good skater, aggressive, like many Swedish players, smart, you know, like knows where to be and when to be there. I didn't see a lot of creativity offensively, that, you know, where, like, it's not like he's making plays that, you know, out of nothing. He's more of a meat and potatoes, straight ahead, use speed, use size, and he's good size, really good size for junior. He'll be light for the game that he's going to have to play at the NHL level still, because he's just a kid, right?
19, yeah.
He might be 20 by now, but he's, you know, in that age group. He'll get heavier. He's a real prospect. I mean, he's got six goals in the American League, so he's had one goal since he went back from the tournament. So it's not like offense is going to come easy to him, but it's in his first year. you know, so he's just getting going. They've got a really good player there. I like him a lot.
Yeah, he got off to a really slow start in Hamilton this year before the World Junior Hockey Championship. And obviously the thing that's going to stand out for anybody who didn't get a chance to see him, he had a very strong training camp, we got to see him, is his size on this team especially really stands out.
If it's one thing to be big, it's another to be big and be able to get around the ice. And one of the real struggles that younger, bigger players have is that in the junior game, or, you know, if they're back in Europe and they're playing 18, 19-year-olds, is they can use their size just to lean on people and push them out of the way. But at the NHL level, you can't do that because you're not stronger than everybody else. You're not heavier than everybody else. You're not more powerful than everyone else. So you got to skate. And that'll be part of the challenge. And I'll give you an example. I just looked it up because I didn't know, but I had a really good idea that so in 37 games, De La Rose has 49 shots on goal. And so in spots in the junior game where he could lean on a player and get to the, you know, to a shooting area, he's not able to quite do that yet. But his size will be welcome. He's a good penalty killer because he can skate. You know, he can get around enough. And I think that'll be noticeable right away, but he's smart. So young, it's funny, you know, when young guys came up, when I was playing, most of us didn't have a clue how to check because nobody did. And there were no systems and there was no video and there was no teaching. Now most of these players are well-schooled, at least in the very basics of playing on the defensive side of the puck. The Swedes are miles ahead. Whatever they do teaching their players, they come to North America, and they're the ones generally that have the among the shortest adjustment periods. Even though they play on the same big rinks, they have generally the shortest adjustment period. And I think De La Rose will be able to at least provide some penalty-killing help, you know, some bottom six size and the ability to get around the rink. But where his benefit's going to be really to the Canadiens is going to be down the road when he gets heavier and really is able to play more of a power game.
With TSN's Ray Ferraro on Melnick in the afternoon on TSN 690, Mitch Melnick, Rod Francis, Mitch Gallo. Rod?
Ray, the path that most of us are familiar with when it comes to making the NHL is you're a phenom in junior, you put up big numbers, you go to the American League, put up big numbers, you're drafted, you go to the NHL, and then you work on defense because you're already creative and you're already an offensive skill, but coaches want you to worry about your play without the puck, etc. Could De La Rose be kind of a reverse engineering type of prospect here, where you talk about he's already got the size and he's pretty sound defensively, where he has to work on his creativity at the professional level?
I guess, but Rod, I would say that's to be creative, you either are or you aren't. You're either a painter or you're not. You know, you could maybe learn to be a better painter, but if you don't have the creativity to look at a blank slate and make something out of it, then you can never be a great painter. It's the same thing with, you know, my wife and I bought a lot when we were building the house. She's like, oh, I could see the house going right there. And I'm like, oh, really? I just see a bunch of rocks and dirt, you know, and I figured the guy building the house would know that. But she had this vision for it. I got no idea. So for him, I don't think he can come to the NHL and all of a sudden be a great scorer. I think a player can learn to be more efficient on the ice, so his effort becomes less wasted and becomes more directed at what he needs to do. And that might be that he already knows how to play without the puck, and they might over with experience of playing, he might find that, oh, if I go to here, I'm going to get the puck, I'm in a shooting position. Because if you've got, you know, literally one shot a game in the American League, you're not getting one shot a game in the National League. You're not going to get that much. You just won't. And so, generally speaking, the guys, if you don't score a lot at the American League level, chances are you're not going to be a scorer at the NHL level. But for De La Rose, he's so young. I mean, he's just, you know, he's in infancy as far as being a pro player. He's not a finished product by any means.
So you mentioned his stat line since coming back from the World Junior Championship. I'm just wondering, Ray, what is it like for an NHL player who gets a call-up for a couple weeks, gets to fly on the private charters, gets to travel with all the luxuries that come with playing in the NHL, and then 2 weeks later they have to go back to the American Hockey League and back to riding the bus?
Well, it can be a couple of different things. Number one, they're up for a couple of weeks. They'll get a paycheck, and they'll see that the numbers are way bigger, and they're going to say, wow, that was awesome. That made my bank account look a lot better. They're going to say, that was incredible fun to be around, to see the way that the NHL is, and I'm getting back there. What do I need to do to get back there? That's one way. Or they can say, man, the American League sucks, and I don't like it, and I don't want to go back to the buses, and they can pout. And then after a demotion, it takes them 3 weeks to get their game back in order. And in the meantime, somebody gets hurt, and because you're not playing well, they call somebody else up. And so, you know, I have a son in the American League, and we've had this discussion, is that you need to be playing as well as you can for as long as you can, so when the window opens, they think it's a good idea to call you up and not somebody else. And so the fight is a tough one in the American League. Man, you're out of the spotlight. You're doing your thing, and you're hoping not only is the team that you're playing for watching and noticing, but everybody else is too. When you're young, I got called up and sent down three times in my first year. And each time I went down, I had a sense that, you know what, I can do this. I can play in the NHL. And I better just keep playing because hopefully I'm going to get a full-time chance. It turned out it was later that first year. But when you get sent back down, there's two ways to go. One is either you sulk a little bit and you say, man, I miss what that was, and I should be there, and I don't belong in this league. I'm too good for this league. And then you play like crap, and they call somebody else up. Or B, you go down there, and you take what you've just learned, which is pace and the need to win puck battles more than you even knew in the American League. You take that information and you apply it to what you're doing. And then in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, when they need a player again, they're like, oh, that player is the guy we need. He's really taken a step.
Because you mentioned Landon Ferraro, is it less demoralizing, maybe too strong, less frustrating for him knowing he's part of an organization that prides itself on developing players the way that he is being developed?
Maybe just a bit. I mean, he's in his fourth year now, and is having his best year. He's got 19 goals, which is, you know, tied for fourth in the league, and has had a fantastic year. But there's a point where you become frustrated with where you are, and you're impatient. I mean, you want a chance. You didn't dream of playing in the American League. You dreamed of playing in the NHL, and in Detroit, it doesn't matter what you dreamed of, because you have to go through the necessary steps to go from Grand Rapids to Detroit. And it might be 2.5 hours on the highway, but it's several years in the making. And I mean, there's Anthony Mantha scored 70 goals last year in the Quebec League, and he's finding that out in a hurry. And Anthony is a terrific prospect. He's huge, strong, he's got great hands, but he's got to learn the pace of pro hockey. And so for Landon, it's, you know, he's... this is his fourth year in, and all you can do is you just keep your nose down and you work. And like I said, if somebody gets banged up, they've called up one forward this year. Detroit's been incredibly healthy. But if somebody gets banged up and they say, we need a penalty killer, they think it's you that's a good idea to call up, not somebody else. And you control that.
All four lines got to be accountable, and all four lines got to contribute and play their role. And that's when we're at our best, when everyone's involved in the game and contributing. I think that's when we've been our best all year and in the past, and we need to kind of get back to that a little bit.
Brendan Gallagher, as you know, Ray, Max Pacioretty had a two-goal game, and Galchenyuk had a two-goal game, and it's not just the fourth line, but with De La Rose getting a shot here tonight, Gabriel Dumont was brought up. He's going to play again tonight. You get the sense that Manny Malhotra will be scratched. They didn't expect a whole lot of offense from Manny Malhotra, who is not only the best faceoff guy in the league, he's a valuable guy. He's one of the nicest guys in the league, one of the best character guys in hockey. But through almost 50 games, he hasn't scored a goal. He's got one assist. That they're probably looking for something offensively out of that fourth-line center position.
They are, and I would say that Montreal is doing much like Detroit's doing right now. Xavier Ouellet, who is just a terrific young player, was playing in Detroit, defenseman, and they sent him down to the minors for really no particular reason. He had played really well, but they called up a different defenseman, Alexei Marchenko, and they're getting a look at these players before the trade deadline. as well to see exactly what they have. So for these players, you know, there's Christian Thomas and there's Dumont and now De La Rose. They got to get a sense of where these players are at. Not necessarily that they were going to move those players, but would they be comfortable moving an older player to clear a spot for them? Or do they have to go get another older player because these young guys aren't quite ready yet? And so while, yes, they're, I mean, they already know what Manny Malhotra is. And I'm with you. I know Manny, and he's from, you know, he's lived in Vancouver. Our families know each other. He's a phenomenal man. He really is. And they won't find anyone more dedicated to his craft than Manny is. But at some point, you already know what he is. You know, he's not going to score for you. But can we find somebody to bring a more well-rounded approach without losing how good he is on the draw and how, you know, without taxing Plekanec to take 45 face-offs a game? Can we do this? And they got to find out. And that's likely what part of the thought process is.
Finishing up with Ray Ferraro in Nashville, the Predators taking on the Toronto Maple Leafs, while Josh Georges plays for the first time against the Canadiens. He was injured. He was in attendance, but injured the last time the Sabres were here. And, of course, it brings to mind that, according to reports, nothing ever confirmed, but it certainly appeared that Marc Bergevin had traded Josh Georges to Toronto for Cody Franzen, who's having a fine year for the Toronto Maple Leafs. They're trying to get him locked up. They're running out of time here. They're clearly, if they don't agree to terms, they're going to have to move him. If you're a team looking for a defenseman, let alone a right-handed shooting defenseman, what do you give up for Cody Franzen?
Oh, well, first of all, he's had a phenomenal year. I'm down in Nashville where Cody started his career. I was talking to their assistant general manager, Paul Fenton, today, and we were watching Franzen, and he said, one of the best passers that we've ever had on defense here. And Nashville's had some guys go through here, right? Ryan Suter and Dan Hamhuis and Shea Weber, Kimmo Timonen. I mean, this is quite a list of defensemen they've had here. And he said Franzen's among the best passers. His game has improved in leaps and bounds. The real question will be, if Toronto cannot get him signed and you're going to move him, the real tricky, sticky spot to this in what you give up is that is the signability pass this year. And for a lot of teams, the lack of knowledge, it's not a lack of information, it's a lack of knowledge. What the cap is going to be really makes this difficult. Because if you have cap space and you make that trade, you can go ahead and be aggressive with Franzen because you've got all kinds of cap room. But there are a lot of teams that can't even make that deal because they're up against the cap now. And Franzen's contract would mean they'd have to dump a few players. And what do you think that market's going to be like this summer? But I would think Franzen would bring, I would say normally a first-round pick, but I don't think teams are going to be too willing to deal a pick in this draft. I'd say you're looking at an A prospect and a B prospect, or an A prospect and a second-round pick. Like, I think he's going to be the highest-priced guy of the unsigned guys on the market this year.
And what about just two other players in Toronto, Daniel Winnick and Mike Santarelli, those guys potentially moving the asking price on them? And right now, in this particular day, are the Leafs asking a bit too much for some of their guys that will be moved?
Not yet, Mitch. I think they should keep the bar high right now. You know, you're still 3 weeks away from the deadline. I guess more than that. You know, almost 4 weeks away from the deadline, and somebody wants to pay it now.
Can't wait, huh?
Pardon me?
You can't wait for deadline day, can you?
Oh, can't wait. That'll be great. There better be some trades, and they better not be in the 6 days prior to it.
That's what's going to happen.
Of course it is. But I'm thinking Winnick is a fifth-round pick somewhere along that line. I mean, he's got three goals. You're not going to get much offense. Very good penalty killer. Santarelli, higher than that, maybe maybe even a second rounder, but you know, a third rounder for sure. If I'm Montreal, for example, and I'm looking at a player, you're talking about a fourth line player, a penalty killer. Santarelli's better than that, and he's fast, really fast. He's an excellent penalty killer. He works extremely hard. If I were a good team and I was looking to add a forward, I would look at a reasonable cost. I would look at Mike Santarelli for sure. He's got nine goals this year, and he plays with tremendous energy. He's a player that took a while to come into his own, but he's right in the prime of his career now.
T TSN's Ray Ferraro on-site, Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee, Predators and Maple Leafs on TSN while the Canadiens are taking on the Sabres. Thanks as always, Ray. Talk to you in a couple of days.
You betcha. By the way, close your eyes when you're watching the Sabres. You can't unsee.
Melnick in the afternoon. Listen live weekdays from 3 to 7 on TSN 690.